It's time for Firearm Friday, a podcast dedicated to bringing together the firearm industry and community. Now here's your host, from the great state of Texas, the tactical leprechaun himself, Chris Dover.
Welcome to the show. I am Chris Dover, and this week we're going to be talking again with Michael Sedini, and he's going to give us some updates with what's going on over there at Walk the Talk America. And since he is the president of Eagle Imports, I'm going to talk a little bit about the wonderful world of firearms importation with brands like Bursa, Llama, and more. But first, let's talk a little bit about AR-500 armor. Now, AR-500 armor can obviously meet your body armor, plate carrier, steel target needs, but they also carry other things over there as well. You can check out some of their medical supplies as well as their apparel that's over there at AR500Armor.com. Again, that's AR, the number 500Armor.com. All right, help me welcome back Michael Sedini from Eagle Imports and Walk the Talk America. Welcome back to the podcast, Mike.
Hey, man. Thank you for having me back on. I appreciate it.
You bet. Now, before we get into the firearm importation part of the business there in Eagle Imports and talk about some of that stuff, I definitely want you to get us up to speed. It's been a while since you were on the podcast talking about Walk the Talk America, and there's some very cool things going on right now with Walk the Talk America. So let's give you the floor there and talk a little bit about some of the new stuff coming down the pipe with Walk the Talk America.
Yeah, absolutely. One of the things I'm most excited for and proud of right now is I think since the last time, we talked before SHOT Show, which...
Oh, yeah, it's been a while.
Yeah, a lot's happened. But one of the things I'm excited for is this firearms insert. We have developed a two-sided flyer, which we are going to put in all of Eagle Imports firearms. That's any Bursa, any Metro Arms, which is also American Classic, Mac, Llama, SPS. Basically, it's going to drive people to our URL, which is WTTA.org/love for the free and anonymous mental health screenings. But for the most part, what I want it to do is be something that somebody sees when they open the box, because even if they don't have any issue, maybe one day they will, or maybe they know somebody that might benefit from this card. But for me, it's just bringing awareness and making sure people understand it's okay, and also bringing them to Walk the Talk America. You know, they just purchased that firearm. Now they know that there's an organization out there that has their back when it comes to mental health, if something ever happens. Hopefully nothing ever does, right? So hopefully most people don't need it. But I'm excited about that. And the cool thing about it is once I announced that Eagle is going to be participating in this with our manufacturers, I've had two other manufacturers contact me and say they'd be very interested in including this card in the box. Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. Nice. I think it's a good start for us. You know, we always use the term policing our own and starting kind of in our own backyards to show the rest of the world, like, this is what we do. To me, this is a very good first step in terms of all the other stuff. You know, not only with all the other stuff that Walk the Talk America does, but this is a perfect way to say to the rest of the world, look, we're getting ahead of this. We're talking about it. We're bringing attention to it. And we have solutions. You know, it's a start. So I'm excited about that.
Right. And I know that I've seen some pushback on it here and there. And you're going to get that, of course, with any project and anything that you do. There's going to be just those people out there, I think. And I've seen a comment from one guy. He was kind of laughing at it, and you know, he's like, you know, what good is this going to do? And I thought, you know, we've really got to get away from that mentality. You know, how difficult is it to print some flyers on a piece of paper and put them in a box with a firearm? And you know, if you have, you know, one person out of thousands that you ship that's able to utilize those resources in whatever way to save somebody some grief and anguish and pain or whatever it might be, that's a win, you know, in my book. So, you know, what's the alternative? It's the alternative is what we're trying to fight against, right? It's these confiscation orders and these stigmas around mental health and all this other stuff. And, you know, I think the alternative of trying to reach out and bring awareness to more people is a much safer approach. Certainly a lot less intrusive, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, it's funny because, yeah, you're going to get pushback. I deal with it a lot. You know, I deal with it from every angle, whether it's what is this really going to do, or, you know, some people go as far as saying outlandish things like, you take that test and then all of a sudden they're coming to grab your guns, which is the classic fear-mongering.
Right.
But, you know, the sad part about it is, and I get into it, and probably a little bit more than I should, but that's just my personality, because I like when people come with a really rational argument as opposed to just saying something and not backing up or having proof. Mm-hmm. But in the end, our hearts are both in the right place, right? We're trying to protect the Second Amendment. And I always have to remind myself that. So it is frustrating at times. And to somebody who says, like, what is this going to do? I don't think, as humans, we need to... I'm okay with voicing that opinion, right? Because that's like freedom of speech. Like, you could say that. But for anyone to think that something isn't going to work, I mean, I look at, you know, people use meditation. Meditation doesn't do anything. So who am I to say meditation isn't going to fix somebody's life, right? And you know those posters that are like mantras or whatever? Like, they're kind of dark and it's like, you know... I mean, maybe that those sayings on there and success and all that stuff on people's walls helps people focus, and that's kind of what I want to do with this card. If it works for you, it does, and if it doesn't, so be it. Toss it out.
Well, don't follow instructions. Yeah, that's a valid point, and it speaks to the awareness, because even if you toss it out, the goal of awareness has been met at that point. That person has to look at that to a certain extent in order to pick it up and toss it out. So, you know, even if you have somebody that purchases one of these firearms and they open it up, just like all the other, you know, not to get off on a tangent, but, you know, the child safety pamphlets that they have to give out with things now, and, you know, all of this other literary material, I guess you could say, that that they ship with firearms and stuff like that, or the dealer has to give out. I mean, people are kind of used to that anyway, so this is not, in the sense of, you know, adding something to a box, is not a unique thought. For the cause, it certainly is. And, you know, if somebody goes to throw that out, they have to look at it, and then maybe they do throw it out, but then maybe, you know, days or weeks or months or even years later, you know, something happens that sparks that memory. That, you know, they have a family member or a neighbor, or maybe even it's themselves that are struggling with something, and they remember that flyer they threw away. Now they've thrown it away, so they're going to have to go on the internet and do a Google search or something to try to figure out exactly what it was they threw away. But I think the awareness goal still gets met, and that's of great importance.
Yeah, I think it is, and it. You know, you could do that all day to your blue in the face, right? Like, I get on a plane, and, you know, I always think of Fight Club. Like, really? Like, if we have a crash landing, are we going to remember all this stuff? But you do it, and it's just in hopes that it doesn't happen, but it kind of sticks in your head. Like, okay, if we did land on the Hudson, just like the guy did, you know, I do remember where the exits are. You know, that type of stuff. It's the same thing. I think it's more or less, you know, it's twofold. If it helps somebody, or somebody gets behind it and gets inspired by what Walk the Talk America is about, and there's far, far, far more people that are than aren't, right? Mm-hmm. From the 2A community. But on the other hand, too, once again, I think let's not discredit what that does for us as a community to say to the rest of the world, you know, look what we're doing. We're addressing the issue. We're not trying to hide from it. We're not trying to do this. We're taking proper steps that shows that we care. We're not what you guys call us, you know, especially the media out there. I think there's that level of this too. It shows some sense of responsibility. But it's fine. Hey, listen, also too, I want to make a point. If people didn't challenge me or say something, or I'm never going to learn, you know, even if I totally disagree with that person.
Yep.
I think it's important.
And, it, you know, it helps to weed out the truth, and it helps to strengthen your belief system. And, you know, conversations are a good thing, you know. Civil discussion, good conversations, regardless of whether you agree or disagree, you know, in my opinion, are always a good thing. And it's always great to have somebody. It's great if you can challenge yourself, but oftentimes we have trouble doing that. So that outside stimulus, if I can quit being tongue-tied here, challenging what we believe and what we think and, you know, what we know to be true. That's all, always a great thing. And I think that's one thing that's kind of shaken up, in a way, the mental health sector with this. I've seen a lot of things come out. I know you posted a lot of stuff on Instagram and Facebook and other places where there's people within the mental health industry at this point that's coming along that's saying, hey, you know, maybe these mental health professionals need to be a little more familiar with firearms and firearm use and how they work and all of this other stuff. And I think that's a great thing. I think that's definitely shows that the WTTA project and the partnership with MHA is really moving things forward.
Yeah, and there's so much more. It's funny because I live this and I'm in it day to day, right? There's a lot that I don't share. I just kind of experience. Mm-hmm. But on that note, on the things you're saying, like I was just in DC a couple weeks ago, attending a mental health function and then attending a firearms function the following day, which is kind of interesting. I was there. It just so happened both of them fell on the same weekend, and I got invited to both, so I went. But you know, people would be surprised. I was the only gun person in the room. There was probably about 70 people there, and there were people asking questions to the panelists, and one of them was ex-military. She was very pro 2A, but at the same time, like, you know, somehow she's affiliated with certain programs that they have. And they were asking her questions, and I didn't want to step on anybody's toes and answer anything, but after there was like a reception, there was a lot of people that came up to me that I think they felt safe because, you know, it's their crew, it's 70 mental health professionals standing there, and I'm by myself, that were asking me questions, just basic questions to try to get a better understanding of the mentality of the 2A community. So like, I'll give you an example. I think you'll get a kick out of this. This one lady comes up to me and she was very sweet and nice. And she said, I talk to my father-in-law all the time and I give him statistics about, you know, firearms and just, he doesn't want to listen. And it's like data, it's data. And I don't understand because he won't come off of his stance on firearms. And, you know, to me, I hear what she's saying. She's taking her data and saying that's the data that's real, mm-hmm. right? And she's spitting out data. Well, we all know that data can be manipulated, right? So I told her, if you continue to just use statistics from God knows where you got them, right? I don't know. Even if you say Harvard, well, who did the study?
Right.
Somebody anti-gun? Because they're going to manipulate those numbers.
Right.
But that's not the conversation you should be having. Stop with the statistics stuff. That's not how you're going to get through to somebody who's pro 2A. Understand where we're coming from, mm-hmm. right? And it changed the whole dynamic. So that's the type of stuff that we need to have. We need to be there so people aren't talking for us.
Yeah, no, totally, totally agree. So she was did she seem like she was hardened anti-gun or just more like she legitimately just wasn't understanding where her dad was coming from?
I don't think she was anti-gun at all, as a matter of fact. I think she was more or less neutral, but yeah. I think she was led to believe that, first of all, I don't think she knows anything about, like, she didn't know anything about ARs, right? So she had that perception right. from what yeah. she had, you ooh. Know, the media.
Yeah, ooh, scary, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But on the other side of it, right, so there is a lot of push in mental health for things like waiting periods. And waiting periods and stuff like that are it's tied in that world to obviously suicide.
Uh-huh. Sure.
Because their theory is, okay, if there's a cooling off period and if somebody is going to commit suicide that 6 days or 5 days or whatever, mm-hmm. they there's a chance that something could happen and that changes their life, right? Now, that we look at that and go, waiting period, I don't need a waiting period, right? Yes. It doesn't apply to us, so why should it apply to everybody? But they believe in that, and I can't discredit their opinion because they're not gun people.
Yeah.
Like, just like I'm not into certain things that my kids are into, so I don't understand why they like us.
Exactly. And, you know, and not being, you know, firearm owners or maybe they even own one, they're just not, you know, they don't know enough about, you know, the culture or the community or even the regulations, which is sad a lot of times. But, you know, you would think with waiting periods, one of the comebacks I always have to that is if we get into that conversation is, well, yeah, if you're talking suicide, right, which is the vast majority of firearm-related deaths in the country, two-thirds or somewhat, and if we're looking at that and we're, and somebody's saying, well, you know, a cooling off period, a waiting period would solve that problem because people would have, you know, potentially have time to snap out of that or seek help or whatever. You know, there's a lot of subtleties, I think, that they're not looking at. And there's one elephant in the room, and that elephant in the room is, okay, the waiting period's great until you have that first firearm. So, you know, if you have one, it doesn't take eight, you know, to commit suicide. So, you know, and then, you know, going from there, and I know the recent talks I've had with Debbie from Mental Health America is how quickly people go from, you know, contemplating suicide to carrying it out. And, you know, if they can't run down and get a firearm, you know, within that time frame, you know, odds are they're going to find something else if they're, you know, if they're that distraught. Because of a time frame. It's not, I don't think it's going to, you know, I don't know. It's just weird to me that they think that's something like that would actually help. And what I love and what I admire about this conversation as well as WTTA and what MHA is doing is moving the conversation from how do we keep people that's contemplating suicide from getting firearms. You guys are moving the conversation to how do we keep people from contemplating suicide, right?
Right.
Let's stop it at that level, and then we don't have to worry about it. And then on top of that, we don't have to worry about suicide by drug overdose or suicide by hanging or, you know, any of those measures as well. You know, we can nip that problem in the bud at the source. And I'm sitting here saying we like I've got a mouse in my pocket, which I don't. But
no, but you get it. I mean, you get it. That's right. Exactly.
Right. Right. All too often, people fail to focus on the root of issues. And it's not just with, you know, mental health. It's not just with the, you know, Second Amendment argument or, you know, socioeconomics or political agenda or whatever it might be. You know, I think that's a human thing that people, you know, we want to find that boogeyman, right? And sometimes there's a master manipulator, there's a root cause, there's something behind the scenes that the thing that's front and center that looks to be the boogeyman is not actually the cause of the issue.
Yeah, it's so for me, like the way I look at it, and like, you know, you had asked a question about her and her stance on, you know, the Second Amendment and everything like that. I'm not a golfer. Right, so I would never ever care if I had to wait 3 days to golf, or they said this is the rule and it made no sense. But what I think that, and this is why the card to me is so important, this is why the range program is so important, because if you're dealing with someone who doesn't really have the passion you do for shooting or the outdoor sports, or, you know, just this anything, you know, training, they're not going to, if they see that you do absolutely nothing to combat a problem, they're more likely to kind of look at you and say, well, he's not doing anything, he doesn't care. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So they're going to try to make the decision for you. I think with the more and more we show the rest of the world, whether that's mental health, the mental health community, or just people that are neutral, we show them, no, we're trying to cut this off at the pass, we're doing stuff. At least when they try to join in and try to make decisions, they're going to say, Well, there is some pretty cool stuff they're doing, because nobody that I told about this card, right, in that room of 75 people, thought that was, they all thought that was a great idea.
Right, and it, right? And yeah, and it is.
Yeah, no, thank you. it just, to me, that's showing, okay, there's some effort there. And not just in our own echo chamber, right? Like, I want to kick down that door in the mental health community to be like, here we are. This is who we are. First of all, we love our Second Amendment. We're not coming off of that. We don't want legislation. But let me show you what we're doing. Some pretty cool stuff. And I think that you'll get behind it. And so far, so good. That's the most important thing.
Right. It's a proactive approach. I mean, all too often, you've got the anti-Second Amendment element that is proposing solutions, right?
Right.
And they're clueless, like we've talked about here. They're clueless as to, you know, the firearm community and culture and the Second Amendment, by and large. So, you know, this is a, we have to, for lack of a better term, we have to fight them on things. Whereas if we're proactive and we're providing the solutions, then they can see that, and then they can contribute things to our movement. In other words, we're the ones ramrodding the things, right? We're the ones controlling the narratives. We're the ones that are kind of holding the power. And then some of the good ideas that they may have, and it's not to say that some of these anti-Second Amendment, anti-gun organizations and whatever, they don't have some good ideas, right? A lot of them do. It's just the application of those ideas, because they don't understand the Second Amendment, is very, very lacking. So if we've got something already going on our side, and then they come in and they say, well, what about this? And that gives us the opportunity that we can work together without having to compromise anything.
1,000%. That's what it is. It's to me, it's an offering, right? Like, if someone's going to come at me and say, well, what does the industry do? Like, do they care? I'd be like, yeah, let me show you. Now I've already got them off balance, because they're like, they probably expected me to say, we don't do anything, right? Because that's what they've been told by everybody else.
Right.
But actually, they've been told the opposite.
Yeah.
Guys like Dick Hogg, they go out there and they act like we're high-fiving every time there's a shooting.
Right.
So like, yeah. You know, and if I didn't know or I didn't care, I'd be like, oh my God, I trust the information I'm getting. You know, how many people do their, that's what I love about those last posts and Instagram, because I was taking those from, the book that I've been reading, is there's so many people out there that kind of put it right back in their face, like, you need to go get training, even if you don't like it. Because if you're going to have an opinion on it, that's the best way to be as a mental health professional. Mm-hmm. You know, look at Debbie at SHOT Show.
Oh, yeah.
You think Debbie after SHOT Show is a different Debbie than Debbie before SHOT Show?
Yeah.
You learned a lot.
See, I didn't have the opportunity to talk with her prior to SHOT Show, but I did at SHOT Show, of course. And even the Debbie at SHOT Show and the Debbie after SHOT Show is sort of a different Debbie. She's learned a lot. Her eyes have been opened a lot. She understands a lot better, how the community is. And until you're inside that fold, you know, I don't know, it's hard to explain to people. You can tell people about the community and the culture and the Second Amendment and all of that, and explain all that to them until you're blue in the face. And until they actually, you know, come into the community or try to be a part of the community and see how they're welcomed and see how, you know, by and large, our community is very, very open and honest and welcoming to people and nurturing to people. Until they experience that, I think it's hard for them to realize. And that has to do with the stigmas of mainstream media and a lot of other factors.
Absolutely. And think about it. If I'm on both sides to the extreme, I don't want us talking. I don't want, you know what I mean? If I'm anti-gun, I don't want Debbie there.
Right.
Because heaven forbid her eyes are open to, like they were, mm-hmm. to a whole new group of people that she's like, you know what? Everybody here is awesome.
Right.
I mean, that's such a great thing. And listen, I promise you this. I was passing out invitations to the NRA show to everybody that was in that room in Washington, D.C. I was literally like, you should come down to NRA show in November.
Right.
Maybe not in November, in Indianapolis. And,
in April, yeah.
In April, yeah. I was like, I will personally escort you around, because I want some of these people, the people that sit on the boards of these organizations.
Right.
Because it's, you know, I'm not going to throw you in the pool, you know, and I'm not going to leave you to get destroyed, and I'll let you come with your beliefs, but I'll just disprove the myths that you have, right, if you have them.
Right.
You know, to be honest, to be fair to everybody that in Washington, no, there wasn't a person that said anything that even made me get a little bit of an emotional reaction.
Right.
You know, and there's a lot of people that just came out and admitted, hey, I don't know. I don't know what I'm talking about, which is fine. Because I don't know everything about mental health as well, you
right.
know?
Yeah, exactly. And that's the beauty of the project. I mean, we all have something to offer in the form of educating the other person. And
right.
It's just a matter of everybody being open, you know, and honest about it, like you say, and saying, hey, wait a minute, I don't know everything about this, so why don't you enlighten me?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And that's kind of cool. Like, you know, I don't want to, honestly, I want to like applaud you for having Debbie on. I'm not even sure that's ever happened before.
I know she's done a lot of, I don't know if she's ever done a podcast. I can't remember if I asked her that or not.
Forget that. I'm talking to, I mean, I'm sure she's done a ton of stuff in her echo chamber.
Right.
But I mean, has there ever been a real mental health professional of Debbie's caliber? I mean, that's a vice president of Mental Health America.
Not of her caliber. I don't think so. I did a live stream, and I'd have to go through my catalog and even try to pull it up. It's buried, I'm sure, at this point. But my wife, which I need to put you in touch with her, eventually, they're wanting to do some stuff for the Gun Gal show, and she worked in a mental hospital here in Texas for quite a few years, a state-run mental hospital. And so I know she's listened to you not only on the podcast with me here and, of course, follows you on Instagram and all that other stuff, but she, you know, she's listened to you on some other live shows and podcasts and stuff as well. And she's like, you know, I'd really like to, you know, because she's got that inside track to how the mental institutions work. And, you know, and I said, well, you know, what would be cool is if you could get maybe Mike and Debbie, you know, all at the same time would be even more awesome, you know. But anyway, I did a show where I did bring in some mental health professionals, but nobody at the level of Debbie's a rock star compared to those. They just kind of worked in the profession. You know what I mean? They were mental health nurses or you know, mental health aides or therapists or, you know, something like that. So on more of a localized scale, you know, whereas Debbie's Debbie's got the eyes and ears and resources of a very good old organization. So she, you know, got access to just tons and tons of information. But she's an excellent person. You know, we recorded that podcast with her recently. In fact, as we're recording today, it actually is dropping today. So if you're out there listening, you know, once you get done here, scroll back through the podcast channel or whatever, wherever you're watching or listening from, and check that one out for sure. It makes a great addition to this conversation. So I'd like to move on here, Mike, if you don't mind, and let's get into the industry a little bit. Let's get into Eagle Imports a little bit. I know there's quite a few people out there that are interested in how that works. So how long has Eagle Imports been around?
Eagle Imports has been around 30 years. Mm-hmm. My grandfather started Eagle Imports. He used to be the president of Stoger. Then he went off on his own, and then my uncle came aboard. Both of them are no longer with us, but, you know, I'm third generation here. So, well, you know, we've been doing this a while. contrary to what some manufacturers may think, that we don't know what we're doing, we've been doing this a very long time. So it's a wild ride, right?
Right. Right.
You know, but I honestly, the two-step distribution model, the importing process, everything that happens, you know, I feel like I'm an expert because I've been around it for so long. So,
right.
You know, feel free to ask me how anything works, but it's, you know, not only am I an importer, that's just putting one aspect to it, but I'm also, you'd say, a marketer and a master distributor, right? And also warranty and customer service. I handle every aspect. So if somebody has a firearm and they're from, I don't know, Columbia, let's just pick a random place that's not one of my, if you're in Colombia, you have a great firearm that you want imported to the United States and built your brand to be built, you find somebody like me, because what I do is I bring it in, I pay you, and then I handle your sales to distribution, which then distributors sell them to dealers, and then dealers would sell them to, you know, the consumer. But in the meantime, I also market your product and handle your warranty and customer service. So I provide a service that kind of makes it so you can just relax,
right?
You know,
right. So you guys provide pretty much everything but the manufacturing, basically. Or do you also have input on that?
You know, I've had manufacturers ask for our input and ask for your direction in which way we would love them to go for another project. So absolutely. Metro Arms, for example, they Hector, the guy who owns Metro Arms, he's always asked for our input on his next 1911 project, or, you know, what will sell, or, you know, do you think you could sell this? Because there are models that we don't bring in because we don't think they'd make sense in the U.S.
Okay. So that's interesting.
Yeah, I mean, we are an extension in some sense. We're an extension of those factories, you know.
Right. Now, in the early days when it started, you know, you guys cover quite a few names now. But in the early days when it started, what names did Eagle Imports start out with?
Well, Eagle Imports has always been Versa and Llama. But we were Llama when Llama was its own.
Was Llama.
Llama, yeah, Llama was Llama from Spain, its own factory and everything like that. Now Llama is part of the Metro Arms family.
Okay.
So it's made out of the Metro Arms factory. So those were the two that I started with.
Okay.
You know, or at least for me when I came into the company in 2006 or 2005. Yeah.
Right.
But we've done other things too. We've sold holsters. We've sold lasers from other countries, and, you know, but our main focus of the business is firearms, and that's what we're good at. But
right,
yeah, so it started with those two, and then it branched off into so many different other things. So
right now with seeking out, do you guys actively seek out companies in any way, or it's more just putting it out there for companies to find you?
We do a little bit of both, to be honest. You know, it's funny. We've been so busy with just, you know, because up until a couple of weeks ago, we had Grand Power. We had, you know, I still work the Avidity Arms project, which, you know, I know you saw that at SHOT Show.
Oh, yeah.
You know, but so we had gotten to the point where it didn't make any sense for us to go looking for anything else. We've had people approach us. We have a few things in the works in terms of the future. Some people approach us with their concept.
Okay.
And don't have a product. So they're like, look, if I get this going, would you be interested? You know, so, you know, for us, when we go to EWA, we used to go to EWA every year. This year it just didn't make sense. And we got way too much going on. Mm-hmm. But, you know, people approach us. For example, Grand Power, right? The reason why we were with Grand Power for a while was because David Copping, who's Grand Power Canada, he had done his research and found like the four companies that do what I do. And then, you know, they chose us about 4.5 years ago. Mm-hmm. But that's them finding me. Now, I'll look, I'm always looking, but also too, I just want to make, everything has to make sense.
Right. Yeah, in other words, what they're doing has to kind of align with what you're already doing. You know, you don't want to kind of mess up the works there. Now,
yeah, and I've talked to people sometimes, and, you know, it's hard when you deal with, you know, like, imagine if you and I were sitting around at SHOT Show and I'm like, do you want to open up a restaurant in Argentina? Like, we don't know anything about how it works down there. We don't know
right.
anything. So there's a lot of these companies that want to come to the U.S. and they have this great product, but they don't understand two-step distribution, or they don't understand, you know, the way the system works. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I've had people like present me with a product that they wanted to rep, you know, for us to rep, and then they'll say something very silly, like, you know, I one example is there's a gun out there that I was talking to the owner, and he has a $6,000 gun. Like, that's what it would retail for.
Wow.
Yeah, and we're sitting there at the bar, and he says, "Mike, you're not going to believe this, but this firearm has a lifetime warranty." And huh? I go, "Yeah, so do all mine." And he's like, "They do?" I'm like, "Yeah. Like, even my $280 gun has a lifetime warranty."
Right.
So, like, so some people just don't understand it, right? So you're like, look, that's not going to make people want to buy your $6,000 gun. It's not.
Right. Not here, anyway.
Not here. Right.
Right.
You know, so you have to measure all those variables, like, that people don't think of, because they don't understand how it works. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of manufacturers that don't want to come here and try to understand how it works.
Right. Right. Now, once you get that company on board, I'm assuming there's tons of red tape and other stuff dealing with, you know, ATF and importation and all of that stuff. About how long does it take once you've got that nailed down to get the okay? And then I've heard too that long guns and handguns are two different situations.
Yeah. Basically, ATF technology has to approve it. Let me just give you examples, mm-hmm. right? Or give you an example. So at one point, I was working with Steven Seagal, mm-hmm. which is kind of funny. But he fell in love with the Metro Arms Mac Bullseye. Mm-hmm. And he wanted to do a Steven Seagal version of the Mac Bullseye. And the cool thing was, is Raphael, who was my national sales manager, and I got to go down to Arizona and go to his house and everything. Like, that's a whole other funny story. But, you know, he was saying, how long before, you know, we can get this to market if you make the changes that I want to make to this firearm? Well, making a change to that firearm, if you make too many changes, it has to go to back to technology. They have to approve it. Mm-hmm. So if you said to me, hey, look, you know, I want to do this, or I want to bring this gun in, I would say you need at least 8 months to a year.
Wow.
Before that product is ever going to make it to market.
Right.
And that's one of the disadvantages of not having manufacturing in the United States, right? Mm-hmm. Because everything that they come up with, whether it's, you know, people say it all the time, why doesn't person just make this? Why doesn't person just make that? Well, not only do they have their government red tape they got to cut through, but, you know, it's the U.S. too.
Wow,
there's
that's
restrictions.
True.
Yeah, I mean, it's a process.
What kind of hangups have you had in the past, if any, with, because I never even considered the exportation of the country of origin. But yeah, you definitely would have red tape there too. What kind of is that something that the manufacturer deals with more than you guys, or is there stuff you guys have to do in that process?
Well, you know, for as far as the U.S., it's pretty, you know, cut and dry of what the process is going to be. Now, it's wait times that vary in the United States, but I have stories, and I mean, I can tell you there have been times when we haven't been able to get a shipment because of silly things like the airlines down in Argentina went on strike. And there's a bunch of guns sitting in some warehouse at the airport, mm-hmm. but the people just went on strike because of the fuel prices or something.
Right.
Like, you get all these variables that you never could account for in your wildest dreams. Like, especially in the Philippines, there's a certain time during elections where they can't sell guns. Mm-hmm. So things like that hurt.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of things that people don't think of, and it's funny because, you know, when you surround yourself with your friends who have similar companies or work for similar companies, I have friends that work at Glock, I have friends that work at Ruger, mm-hmm. And there are times when I'm telling them about a challenge that I have, and their answer is coming from the mind state of having a manufacturing company here, mm-hmm. right? So it's like, why don't you do this? And then I always have to remind them of the things like, yeah, well, that's going to take this amount of time. And the point system, that's another thing. There's an actual point system for handguns that are imported that you have to hit. So for example, if Bursa wanted to make like a similar gun to Kel-Tec's 380 or Ruger's LCP, mm-hmm. we technically couldn't. The Bursa Thunder 380 CC is as small as you can bring in.
Wow, that's interesting.
And that's a rule that makes zero sense, right? Mm-hmm. Like, who cares?
Wow.
So, yeah, there's a lot of drawbacks to the position that I'm in when it comes to bringing new products and different versions of products to the market. Mm-hmm. So,
and maybe is that why you see a lot of the imported firearms, not necessarily just the ones that Eagle Imports is bringing in, but is that why you see the designs are similar a lot of times to, you know, you've got a lot of 1911 style, for example, and then a lot of the Bursa line has that Walther PPK-esque look to it, or the Makarov look to it. Is that sort of the part of the reasoning that the designs are similar to those more traditional designs, or is that just something that that particular manufacturer, is that just a choice they're making?
I think it's more of a choice they're making when it comes to the visual aspect of it, right?
Mm-hmm, right.
Because they could revamp everything, but then again, remember, like, they have the rest of the world to sell to as well.
True.
So, you know, making changes just to appease one market is always a tough decision for them, especially since there's so many different owners. For example, like Bursa has a bunch of different owners. So, you know, getting people to come together and agree, yes, we're going to invest all this money to make a certain firearm that only the United States will sell. You know, that's a big decision from a business aspect.
Right.
You know, but as far as like, yeah, there are variables, right? Like, can we bring it in? Can we change it enough? Mm-hmm. If we change it here, what is that going to do to our market over there?
Right.
You know, will they accept it with those changes, or are those changes being made for, you know, with Bursa, every change they make to something, they have to consider the Argentine military or the Argentinian police.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, they're looking at not only with likability and profitability across the globe, but they're also, I got to think, they're probably also looking at design features for the different countries as to whether or not that can be sold in that country, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's so many different, it's funny, people, you know, the U.S. has a culture, right?
And we're a little bubble, yeah.
Yeah, it's a gun culture. So when we go to other places, it's interesting to see like what works there or what doesn't. Or even from the standpoint, when I'm in Argentina, I always find myself, because it's so weird to me to see police officers with Bursas on their hip.
Right.
Like, I have been caught staring at their firearm. I've seen their eyes when they look at me, and I'm like fixated on their firearm, and I almost want to be like, no, I'm only looking, you know, like I'm not going to do anything.
That's mine.
Yeah, it's a weird thing, because right. It's, you know, if I see a cop with a Glock, it doesn't even faze me.
Right.
I'm so used to seeing that. Right. But, you know, it's funny when you go to other countries and you just see the either the rules, the laws, or whatever. You know, and obviously, laws vary from different countries. Some are strict and it doesn't do anything. Some are lenient, and you know, it's really weird, and especially in light of like what happened yesterday. Mm-hmm. You know.
Yeah. No. Absolutely. Now with the sales and the marketing aspect, or I guess more the sales aspect of things. You guys just handle the U.S., right? You don't have any play in the distribution to other countries, or do you?
No, that's the other thing too. So every one of these manufacturers has relationships all over the world. You know, that's why you'll see a lot of them at EWA, because they're working the deals that they have with, say, India or Russia or whatever.
Right.
Yeah, so for us, we can't, there's nothing we can do. We're strictly the United States. And that's kind of why I wanted to, you know, that's why I branched off into the Avidity Arms Project, because it gives me a little bit more flexibility. Because when when things go bad here and sales slow down, I can't turn around and sell it to another country.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, I have to make it work in the United States.
Right.
So,
right.
It's one of the drawbacks. You know, creating Avidity Arms helps me take my business a little bit more vertical, because there's so many other things you can do when you manufacture here and export as opposed to solely importing.
Right. Now, with the sales of the companies that you are partnered with, do you know what percentage of market share U.S. has compared to their other outlets across the globe?
We always dominate it.
Really?
Okay. Yeah. I would say that the only time that I've ever, you know, first of all, they're not really going to let me be privy to that information.
Right, right. So this is unofficial speculation is what you're saying.
Yeah, I mean, but I do know from just, you know, especially the guys at Bursa and stuff like that, because I've had relationships with those guys for years,
right.
Years.
Yeah.
You know, the American market is huge for them. They
sure.
need it. You know, think about this. When I first started in this industry, and when I say first started, I'm not using all the times I dipped my toe in it when I was younger, like helping out my
right.
grandfather and uncle right. at a SHOT Show when I was in college. But I'm talking about like 2005. There were all these firearms manufacturers and companies that there were. You know, we had some really, really good years, and people came out of nowhere. You know, I remember going around selling Bursa Thunder 380s, and the only competition that was out there was mm-hmm. Kel-Tec.
Yeah. Yep. I can remember those days. Yeah. At one point, I would say the Bursa 380 was the most popular concealed carry in the country at one point.
Yeah. I mean, it was you know, we didn't really have to market, and it was before kind of social media, and you know, it was one of those things where it was really nice to be in that space, because when you compared like the Kel-Tec to the Thunder 380, it was a night and day. Right?
Oh yeah, definitely.
Because one was really tiny, we couldn't bring that something in that size anyway. So ours kind of bridged the gap between like a Kel-Tec and maybe you go with like the Walther PPK, which was way more expensive.
Yes.
But now you have all these great companies that are making great products.
A lot of polymer.
Yeah, right. Like, polymer firearms manufacturers started sprouting like mushrooms.
Right.
Right. You had your Diamondbacks, you had your Skies, you had, I don't know, it's just such a saturated market now. It's a completely different ballgame. And that's what I think one of the things, like, having this kind of discussion has made it really tough for a lot of the foreign manufacturers that, you know, export to the United States. It's hard for them to wrap their head around that, because
right.
what do they care? They want sales, right? And everybody thinks they have the greatest gun in the world. I've never met a manufacturer that didn't have the best gun in the world.
Right.
Right. So, you know, you got to kind of deal with ego. You got to deal with, you know, look at this situation with Grand Power. I mean, we're still friendly, and we always will be, but, you know, with Grand Power, the way they came to the United States and where they are now, it's night and day from where it was, but they still feel like they had to make a change.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, being involved with Llama, you know, previously, and then the move, a lot of people out there, I know that I don't own a new Llama, but I've got a couple of older ones, and I like them. They are what they are. What happened there that moved Llama in with... Who's Llama in with now? I can't remember. American Classic?
Metro.
They're in with Metro now. Okay. What happened there that they acquired? Did Llama just decide to shut down and Metro acquired them? Or do you have any idea how that worked?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely. So Llama shut down completely in Spain. They had... you know, they've been around for so long and they had so many different owners, and I think it just was run improperly. Mm-hmm. In the end, it was weird. Okay, so when I started as a rep, I had no prejudice against any guns. I didn't know any better, mm-hmm. right? I had never really ventured outside of my booth when I helped my family at SHOT Shows.
Right.
Shows like that. So I just, you know, and I didn't grow up around shooting a lot. You know, it just didn't happen. So when I did get a chance to shoot, it was always shooting the guns that, you know, my family represented. Mm-hmm. So, you know, starting out as a rep on the road with Llama was always interesting because I hit it at the very end as it was getting closer to the end. Mm-hmm. So I feel like Llama would make like 25 good guns and then he'd make 25 horrible ones back in the day.
Right.
Right?
Right.
Because I would walk into these stores and you never knew what kind of reaction I was going to get from the store owner.
Right.
Bursa, you never had a problem with. Nobody ever. Like, if I walked into a store and I said, listen, I work with the factory, I'm a rep, I represent Bursa, they were like, oh, cool, we sell the 380. You know, you always got that. With right. Llama, I would either get, oh, I sell a ton of Llamas, or I'd get, come here. Yeah. Like, come back here, I want to talk to you.
So, right.
You know, I feel like a lot of what happened to Llama was their quality control. Mm-hmm. You know, factories have... I will never say another bad word about manufacturing because, you know, I've learned enough over the years to understand that, you know, suppliers create issues, governments create issues. There's so many different variables in manufacturing, and it's not as easy as people sit back at home and think, well, why can't they just make that? Well, it doesn't work like that. Everything has a tool, a mold,
yep.
You know, there's a huge expense that goes into that. And then trying to get it perfect when you have so many parts, you know, you could change one part of a firearm and it completely changes another part, you know, it's almost like a whack-a-mole. But, you know, for me, Llama, I saw their quality slip a little bit and then their factory just went under. Mm-hmm. They were just out of money and they closed. Well, we always had owned the name in the United States.
Oh, okay.
And we just decided to work with Metro and bring it back. We felt like enough time had gone by where we could kind of use the nostalgia of people who knew the name.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, and bring it back. So basically like a couple of years ago, you know, Metro Arms started cranking out with the Metro Arms quality, right? Llamas. Oh. And that's been a little bit of a challenge as well because we've had to try to change some people's attitudes, you know, like
right.
We were honestly thinking of having a campaign that was like, this is not your grandfather's llama.
Yep. Yeah, I've been using the hashtag, what, not your dad's llama or something like that, I think.
I mean, it really is one of those things.
So it really is, and I think it's just a matter of awareness of getting it out there and letting people know, hey, it's basically just the name now, right?
Yeah, it's just the name. And also, too, the style, right?
Right? Like the aesthetic look, right?
Right. The Micro Max, even the name of the actual model, the Micro Max, you know, the little 380 gun, mm-hmm. that's one of the ones we wanted to start. We wanted to start with the two flagship models.
Right. Right. Well, the 380 is one of those that there's not very many of those out there. So I think from a marketing standpoint, that's a good idea because you're not talking about a heavily saturated market with those. I don't know what the demand is on them. They're certainly cool. But, you know, there's not like we were talking about with the polyguns, there's definitely not a saturation of 1911 380s out there in the market.
No, it's a tough little gun to make. It's, you know, it's funny. People always think that, you know, as firearms companies, some of the people that think, okay, that's his competition, are really close to me. Like, I'm really close with all the Arms Corps guys. Mm-hmm. They all live in Vegas. You know, we all help each other. But technically, Metro Arms and Arms Corps are competition, right?
Right.
Like,
right.
They go head-to-head, and their factories are all in Manila. Mm-hmm. But, you know, they made a little 380 as well, and it's very similar, right? Because it's coming off that Colt Mustang platform. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we've shared with each other just the headaches of making that little 380. You know, it's kind of like the magazine's always a bear. I mean, there's certain aspects to firearms, like creating them, that's tough to do. So sometimes there's a reason why there's not a saturated market for a little thing. Right. 1911s are not easy to make, man. It's right. It's, you know, and the reason, you know, obviously.
Well, they require a lot that, you know, your mass production poly stuff just doesn't. You can mold and machine and stamp a lot of the poly stuff, and parts are completely interchangeable from one, you know, you take, you know, it's been said about Glock, for example, how you could take 25 Glocks, completely disassemble all 25, throw them in a box, shake it up, dump the parts out, put 25 Glocks back together, and they all work. And with a 1911, not necessarily.
No, absolutely. You know, one of the funny stories I always tell people is when I first got in the industry, and I was actually in, like I had just been hired by my family. We had the whole nepotism going on, but when I first got into the industry, my first show was the NRA show in Philadelphia. And my uncle, like, drove me down there from Jersey and pretty much dropped me off. And I didn't know much about anything. Like, I knew enough to, like, memorize the catalog, so I could tell you, like, oh, that's a, you know,
right.
Pen shop, right? And I'm sitting there, and Charlie Brown from MKS Supply, which is High Point, he's been, like, a mentor for me, because that day, he was like, you don't know what you're doing, do you? And I'm like, no, I have no clue. And he's like, George just dropped you off here? And I'm like, yeah, George told me he'd see me at the end of the show. He's going back to Jersey. And he said, oh, man. He's like, I'm going to help you as much as I can. But, you know, he's like, hey, listen, don't let anybody take apart any of your guns. he gives me that warning. Well, you know, I'm the only person working the NRA booth, so I'm just slammed with people that want to see these guns. And sure enough, this guy takes apart one of the 1911s from Llama. Uh-huh. And like you just said, it just reminded me of this story, because you're like, it's a complicated, you know, animal.
Right.
It's, you know, and of course he takes it out and he's messing around trying to put it together, and he's like, can you help me? And I had to look at him, and I'm like, no, you're on your own. You did that.
Right. Right.
You know,
should have wrote him out an invoice. That would have solved it.
Exactly. Like, it's funny, these days I'd have less, like, anxiety about it, but, you know, that was my first day. So
let's talk about the Affinity project a little bit, if you don't mind. Where are we at on that? I mean, I was able to play around with that at SHOT Show a little bit. Very nice platform for sure. So where's that project at currently?
We are actually very far in that project right now. We obviously, you shot it. It does exist. It's not the unicorn everybody acts like it is.
Right.
We are waiting. We had to make a few tweaks to the slide. We're waiting on those completed slides to come back in from the vendor who's making them. And then it's going to the final testing phase, where they kind of torture test everything and, you know, put 10,000 plus rounds through, you know, five different guns. So that's where we're at with that. We're at the final kind of testing part of it. And people always ask all the time, like, why did it take so long? Well,
because it does.
Yeah, because it does. And, right. You know, especially when you self-fund it, I mean, that's, you know, there's so many different aspects of building your own firearm or creating your own firearm that, you know, I might not have done it if I would have known, like, what the next few years are going to be like 4 years ago. But it's getting there. And, you know, Rob Pickus, I love him to death. He announced it, I think, a little too early. But, you know, he didn't.
No. He jumped the gun. Rob jumped the gun? What?
Yeah, right? Rob had good intentions, man. I think he wanted to. You know, the cool part of the story was inviting the world to see this gun be built from behind the scenes. But then, you know, we had some down years where it had to take a little bit of a back burner at times, and we wanted to get it right. So, you know, that kind of kept it from getting there. But we're there. I mean, we're finally there. For me, it's interesting, you know, because people, they flip us a lot of crap on Facebook, and, you know, there's a lot of ball busting that goes on.
Well, of course.
Yeah, but for me, it's weird. It exists. I have... you know, I have a sample of my house that sure. can be shot. So
I've laid hands and fired rounds to one myself, so I can attest to it. It does exist. There may not be many at this point, but they do exist.
Right. Yeah, and you know, with Rob, the way his mind works, it's like he'll call me up, hey, I just created the PD-8. You know, I'm like, what did you do? I want to get through this, like, that's one
a,
gun.
One at a time, yeah, right. Now, with that firearm, what were there certain things you were looking at? Were there certain features and stuff like that that was important? Certain problems that, you know, I don't want to say problems, but maybe certain innovations or advancements or something you wanted to make a better mousetrap, in other words?
Well, yeah, absolutely. And it's okay to say problems, because anybody that builds a firearm and acts like there's no problem is a liar. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like,
right.
I know this for a fact just from the guys at Versa. I mean, most guns, when you talk to owners of firearm manufacturers, like if you talk to Martin from Arms Corps, or you talk to Charlie from MKS, or Lucas Bonadovani from Versa, they don't actually make fun of you when you said this thing has taken 4 years. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Because
right.
they have, all of them have firearms that they were working on in the background mm-hmm. that they just released, and no one knew that there was 4 or 5 years of getting it right behind it. Ruger, all of them. You know what I mean?
Right.
So, you know, I have no problem with saying problems. But, yeah, every time you do something, something comes up. So, especially with Rob, you know, Rob was – I let Rob design the whole thing.
He's got to be one of the – probably the best and the worst person to do R&D stuff, I'm sure.
Oh, dude, listen. Anybody that has, you know, that kind of mind frame
right.
is there's you got to take the good with the bad and always understand it, because
right.
the brilliance there, you know, it outweighs the bad. But man, like he'll do something or somebody will say something to him, right? And that might change the whole direction.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, like so he takes in feedback from people that have shot it, and then we tweak something, right?
Right.
And that's what I was telling you earlier. When you tweak something, sometimes that tweak causes a problem somewhere
else. Exactly. Exactly. it's a mechanical device, so that's what you deal with, unfortunately. You know.
Yeah, it is what it is. It's you just have to be patient, and you know, like I said, the worst part about self-funding this without your own manufacturing facility is that there's all these variables that you don't think about. So like your guy for slides, your guy for, you know, trigger bar assemblies, your guy for whatever, you know, we've had people that have run machines, and the guy who runs that particular machine had a heart attack, and that delayed the process.
Oh,
you
wow.
know?
Yeah.
Yeah, but those are things that people don't think of. Like,
yeah.
there's always something that comes up, and sometimes it's out of your hands. And when you're talking about tooling, it's not like you can just go grab your stuff and take it somewhere else.
Sure you can, man. Go to the garage, drill press. It's all good. You can make it work.
Yeah. The garage is always great for one-offs. Like, I know a couple of Rob's friends that are pretty handy, and they'll do something, and it's really cool, but you're like, yeah, you just did that because you filed something, and you know, it doesn't work for production.
Right.
So.
Right. So when, and I don't know if you can talk about, you know, your plans on production, but, you know, you say you've got, sounds like you've got a lot of fingers in the pie on that one. Is that, are you potentially looking at simplifying that when it goes, you know, into production?
Oh, absolutely. I want to simplify it. I have to for my mental health.
That's what I was thinking. I was sitting here thinking, well, he's talking about all these guys that are working on all these different aspects of it, and I'm like, surely he's got plans to try to simplify that process a little bit for production, because if not, that's going to get crazy.
Yeah, that's why I'm really excited for this testing phase, because once it tests out that the it's a proven model, like there's no issues, then I could start trying to consolidate where it's being built. You know, you talk with people and they always say, hey, you know, we could do that for you, or we could, or people know their wheelhouse, right? They're like, look, we're good at slides and barrels. Like, they'll just flat out tell you. But yeah, my suggestion for anybody, like if you came to me and said, I'm making my own gun, my first thing I'd say to you is, look, make sure you try to cut down the amount of vendors you have, because that's a killer. Look what it did for Hudson, you know? And, you know, if we would have succumbed to the pressure that a lot of people have when they're doing this, you know, we would have already put ourselves out. There's no doubt in my mind. But, you know, just because we've been methodical and we just kind of take our whippings online from people that are frustrated, like, yeah, this gun's never going to come out. It's it's a unicorn. You know, like, you can't. You have to, unless you're using other people's money.
Well, they don't understand the process. You know, you have those people. And then you have you guys pre-sold anything?
We have. With on the distributor level.
Okay. Yeah. I got you. Because the biggest gripe that I see is the people is that they pitch it to the consumer and they pre-sell directly to the consumer, and then you've got these early adopters that, you know, 5 minutes after the project goes live, they've bought in, and they don't realize that it could be 4 or 5 years before the production. is there, you know, and they're going to have to wait that out for delivery, and so I think that causes companies a bad rap a lot of times too.
Yeah, no, I mean, the only thing that we did with on the consumer level that would have been frustrating is get people excited. We didn't, we didn't do anything like pre-buy or, you know, do this and you get that. It's all been on the up and up there in terms of like that. It's just a matter of announcing something too soon, right?
Yeah.
Like, yeah. People want it.
Well, and it's good to come on and talk about, you know, those types of things in a format like this and be open about it. You know, too many companies are secretive with it, right? And, you know, I think as long as you're open and honest and saying, hey, we're still working on it. We've got tweaks we've got to make because, you know, at the end of the day, people can be excited about it and be frustrated that it's not out yet. But, you know, do you want to go through a little frustration and have a good product at the end of all of that? Or do you want somebody to rush something like so many firearms now, especially from major, you know, big name manufacturers seem to be doing, unfortunately, and seemingly rush things to market. And then, you know, for 2 years, you know, have issues. So it's like, do you want to spend time on the R&D and go 4 years or so and get it right? Or do you want to push that thing out in 2 years, it'd be a piece of crap, and for 2 years you're having to not only redesign, but you're having to deal with warranty issues and bad publicity and, you know, all of these other things. And I think in the end it's better off to wait.
I think so too. It's, you know, talking to me in 2006 and talking to me now is obviously, I mean, that's life, right? We all grow up and we learn. But I was that guy at one point too. Like I looked at everything as, why can't they just do this? And I remember saying to like the Versa factory, just do this. And, you know, not understanding the process. But, you know, I look around at, you know, companies like Smith & Wesson, and if they have a massive recall, I mean, that's devastating. And their reputation can survive those things, right? Because they're this machine, you know, publicly traded. I personally can't. I mean, Eagle, that's why Eagle, one thing I know, so when you look at business, right, and you look at your firearm, you have to have a quality product, you have to have an affordable product, especially in the United States, but there's so many layers of it too that you have to have. You have to have good customer service. You know, you have to have people that are attentive to the customer's needs. You have to have a product that, you know, people like Crimson Trace or Galco, they want to make accessories for.
Yep.
Like there's so many layers to this, and that's one of the things, like, I know that my business, Eagle Imports, is hands down, you know, I'm confident that we have the best customer service on the planet. The only reason I'm twice as comfortable with saying that out loud is because I had a consultant come in and tear my business down from top to bottom and examine everything. And one of the things we graded out off the charts on was customer service.
Right.
So that, I think, has been great, you know, in terms of when there has been like a small blip or something, you know, we've had to do something like change parts out on something, you know. But those are things that, from a business standpoint of firearms, it's not, don't just rush out a product, but also make sure that you have your whole infrastructure behind that product and you're ready for any kind of issue. And there's a lot of stuff, there's layers to it, man.
Yeah,
you know.
Right, right. Yeah, and I appreciate you sharing a lot of that insight. We're pretty much out of time, Mike, unfortunately. But
man, that flew by quick.
Yeah, it does. It does. But when we covered
we're just chatting.
We covered a lot of ground, and I don't think anybody out there has fell asleep. At least I hope not. But before we split, give us a little spiel on WTTA, please. How people can get a hold of those screenings again, and what all's available there, as well as Eagle Imports, and where they can look at some of the cool firearms and things available with Eagle.
Okay, so basically with Walk Talk America, to go and get a free and anonymous mental health screening, go to WTTA.org/love, or just visit our website. You can get there from there, just WTTA.org. Also on social media, Walk the Talk US. That's for Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. I would say we're most active on Instagram, but Facebook's pretty good too. Twitter, you know, is not as strong for us, but I don't think a lot of people interact with us there anyways. As far as Eagle, go to eagleimports.com. You go to bursa.com. You can go to Metro Arms. All, you know, our website is really cool. We have Gunfinder there, so you can find what type, you know, because there's different brands. But we have a Gunfinder on there where you can actually get to whatever type of gun you're looking for, whether you're a first-time gun owner, you're a female, you're a competition shooter. It weeds out the whole thing for you, but you can go through the lines there. And then obviously we have, you know, Bursa underscore USA for all the, you know, social media outlets, Metro Arms underscore USA, Avidity Arms is where you can go if you want to see more of that project. But we're on social media. You can find us. It's all linked. So
very cool. Well, thanks again, Mike, for jumping on with us and talking. I appreciate it. And we keep in touch pretty regular, and so you know you're always welcome. Anytime there's anything new with Eagle or WTTA, you need to talk about.
No, I really appreciate it, man, and thanks for having me on again. So I'm sure I'll be talking with you soon. So
thank you for joining in on another Firearm Friday. Don't forget to log on to clovertech.com. There you'll find our social media links, the blog, cool swag, and more. If you'd like to help support our projects and take advantage of some extra perks, you can do so over on Patreon at patreon.com/clovertech. Have a great weekend.